You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat on this Sunday, it's the start of a new week, and it does not begin on a positive note for the Rockets. They took it on the chin Saturday night in Detroit, 108-101 losers on the road. It's the Rockets' second consecutive loss and seven in the past nine games. That 14-game winning streak and 20 of 21 stretch feels like a distant memory at this point. Rockets now fall to 1-2 without James Harden. And perhaps the most disappointing thing about the Rockets losing to Detroit, and the Pistons did not have Andre Drummond, the Rockets did have James Harden, but it's not like the Pistons were exactly loaded themselves. Now, they're not devoid of talent. The Pistons are 21-17. They've got a winning record. Tobias Harris had 27 points, 8 rebounds. Pistons shot 12 of 25 from three, which is 48%, and that's tough to do no matter what the defense is. So you do tip your hat. It's a decent team. But at the same time, the Rockets were just lethargic and not even competitive for long stretches of the second half of this game. And I know it's the end of a three-game and four-night stretch for the Rockets on the road, so maybe there's some tired legs, but it was a back-to-back for the Pistons as well. So all of that stuff, at the same time, while it may be true, it also starts to sound like excuses. And the bottom line is, the Pistons found a gear that the Rockets could not get into. And the Rockets, even though they have a clear incentive to win games, it's not like the Spurs, now just two games back in the loss column, for the number two seed of the Rockets. The Rockets now at 11 losses, 27 and 11 on the year versus 27-13 for the Spurs. So there's an incentive for the Rockets to win games, but ultimately intensity just was not there, especially in the second half. Rockets got off to a fast start Saturday night, 37 points in the first quarter, but in the second half only scored 43 points in the second half in the third and fourth quarters combined. And most telling, if you actually break it down, 17 of the 43 points the Rockets scored in that second half came in the final 4 minutes of the game when it was basically over. At that point, the Pistons had 100-84 lead, so they were up by 16 points with four to go. Everyone in the gym knew that game was over. The intensity lagged, and the Rockets were able to put up 17 points late. When it actually mattered, the first 20 minutes of the second half, and the Rockets actually went in with a one-point lead to the second half, the first 20 minutes, the Rockets scored 26 points. That is just simply not good enough, and it's not to say that defense was great either, but I think offensively is where you have to start this, because the Rockets, they were cold from three, but more than that, it's a matter of Chris Paul needs to take over games more than he did Saturday night as a scorer. And that's where I'm going to start our 3 points recap. And I'm certainly not meaning it to be critical of Chris, who overall had a nice game, 16 points that led the team, 13 assists also led the team, and 7 rebounds, which was second only to Clint Capella, who had 11 boards to go with his 14 points inside. So Chris overall had a sound game. He was 5 of 10 for the field, so his efficiency is good. And by and large, he's coming off a very successful game, 28-9-7 against the Warriors. But in this stretch without James Harden, the Rockets are looking for a new alpha. They are going to need someone who can just take over in tough stretches as a scorer. And that's a fine line to walk for Chris, because by and large, especially here in Houston, when James Harden is usually on the court, for Chris, it's usually about facilitating. It's usually about getting the rest of the team involved. Well, with James Harden out, you're going to have stretches like this where the team goes cold. Specifically, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker, they continue to be cold. Trevor Ariza had a second consecutive poor showing from behind the arc. And the three of them, between Ryan, Trevor, and PJ, they were a combined 4 of 19 from behind the arc. And sometimes that's going to happen. That's the way it goes from time to time. But when that happens with James Harden on the floor, you typically see James Harden getting more assertive for himself. And that's what I think you need to see more of from Chris Paul. And you look at the stat line, it doesn't look egregiously bad. He had 10 field goal attempts, which is a little low. But again, what I'm going to go back to is drawing the line between the last 4 minutes of the game when it was over. Of those 10 field goal attempts by Chris Paul, six of them, only six, came prior to the last 4 minutes of the game. In those last 4 minutes, Chris shot four times and made three of them. But at that point, the game's over. What you need is Chris Paul in that takeover mode earlier in the second half when you could see things starting to slip away from the Rockets, and that wasn't there. And again, it's not that he can't do it. And also, generally, you want guys to be willing to pass the ball. You need guys to get their teammates involved. That's generally what he's here for. But this is a rare circumstance without James Harden, where if the Rockets are not making their threes, which they were not on Saturday night, then you just need someone to go out one-on-one and make a play from time to time to get you that big basket to stop the bleeding. And without James Harden, Chris Paul is by far the best candidate to do that. And right now, it's not something that I feel is particularly troubling. Again, we're just three games into the Harden-less stretch. There are going to be some growing pains, but right now it looks like Chris is trying to kind of walk a fine line between his usual facilitating and now the increased need for scoring. Against the Warriors, I think you could see he was very comfortable stepping up into more of a one-on-one creator mode. Against the Pistons, he seemed a little reluctant. Sometimes the mid-range shots were there, he didn't take them, and that's what kind of bothers me more. If he went out and shot poorly, then you can just chalk it up and say, hey, everybody has a poor shooting game. The same way that Trevor Ariza had been hot until these past two games when he's been 1 of 8 and now Saturday 2 of 9 from behind the arc. Everybody gets cold from time to time. But what bothered me about Chris in this game was that you just didn't see the raw attempts, in my opinion, that you need to have, especially when the offense goes south to the point where you literally have just 26 points in 20 minutes. And that's where, in my opinion, this game got away from the Rockets. You can point to a lot of factors. Offensively, I would say the biggest change between the first two games without Harden, when you averaged 115 points, and that included one game against the Warriors, all three of your backcourt guys, Chris Paul and then Gerald Green and Eric Gordon, were all going. When you look at the Warrior game, boy, Gerald Green had 29, Eric Gordon had 30, Chris Paul had 28, and all of them did it combined at about 50% from the field. Finally, Saturday, we did see some regression from Gerald Green. Had 15 points, but did it on 5 of 14 shooting, including just 4 of 12 from behind the arc, so he was not nearly as efficient. Chris Paul, we went through his line, he was efficient, but you didn't have anywhere near the attempts to get him going from a scoring perspective the way you would want. And Eric Gordon, still 7 assists, which is nice to see. He's had 6, 7, and 7 in the assist column since losing James Harden, which helps from an overall facilitating standpoint and try and get other people involved, but certainly his teammates did not make nearly enough threes, and overall, Eric had just 15 points, 6 of 13 from the field, which is solid, but nowhere near the impact that he had on Thursday. And it's probably not fair to expect that from Eric every single game, but what you would hope for is that even if guys like Eric Gordon and Gerald Green fall back to earth a little bit from the way they played against the Warriors, it's offset by the likes of Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker getting back to the players they should be. And unfortunately, folks, that's just not happening. We mentioned 4 of 19 between them, and I'll go into Ryan and PJ even more in the latter of our three segments. Now, for the second point, I'm kind of burying again the Ryan and PJ discussion because it's the continuation of a known trend. Second point, I don't want to let the defense off the hook. So now I do want to transition into talking about that, because when you look at how this game against Detroit started, the Rockets actually had 37 points in the first quarter. They were very crisp offensively. They were making threes, but ultimately the Pistons were able to hang around, only down 6 after the first quarter, only down 1 at the break, and they did that largely because they were getting far too easy of looks on the offensive end. It was a game the Pistons played small an awful lot. Clint Capella, even though he had 14-11, he was a minus 15. It was tough for the Rockets to play their traditional big sets. Now, Tarik Black off the bench did have 20 very solid minutes, 13-6, plus 8 in the plus minus, 6 of 6 from the field. But Tarik had to play a little bit more. Nene still out with the knee injury, and this was a game when the Rockets had to play a little smaller anyway because of how the Pistons were trying to kind of pace and space their way through this game, and the Pistons did, again, have a nice shooting night from behind the arc, 12 of 25. But what ends up happening in this situation is that when the Rockets have to play smaller, there's a lot of switching that needs to be done. Certainly they made Capella pay, as evidenced by the minus 15 in his 28 minutes. But even when Tarik Black was out there, the defense was just not where it needed to be. Too many of the threes were open, uncontested. The communication was not great. And what was really disappointing to me was that the intensity was not great. Now, it picked up a little bit in the fourth quarter. They limited the Pistons to 20 points, and they ultimately tried to get back in the game. They just dug themselves too much of a hole at that point. But really, the Rockets, sometimes the game can be very simple. Can you stop the guy in front of you with the basketball? And too often, they didn't. And sometimes, you know, it's not even just guys you would think that maybe aren't great defenders. There were guys taking guys like Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker off the dribble and beating them far too easily. It wasn't one or two weak spots. It was all the way across. The intensity was not there. And it's interesting because earlier Saturday, there was the news of the Lakers releasing Andrew Bogut, and I've said in the past, I would be open to the Rockets getting more rim protection. Now, would they make a move on Bogut right now? I doubt it, because A, it's not exactly a huge need for the Rockets, that backup center spot, because you do have Nene and Tarik Black, and B, it's not like the Rockets can go after unlimited buyout candidates. My guess is that they wait until February when you have a better idea of what the market is as a whole. The Rockets are going to be pretty desirable as far as destination for some of these bought-out players, and who knows, maybe somebody like Tyson Chandler, who's even better for that spot than Andrew Bogut, becomes available. Now, it's possible that maybe Bogut waits until February himself because he knows that his market is not going to be fully there until teams like the Rockets and other contenders, for that matter, will throw the Celtics, the Cavaliers, the Warriors in there. Maybe he knows that nobody's going to go all in for Bogut unless they know what the other options are. So maybe Bogut hangs around as well. But the reason I'm making this point, a lot of Rockets fans talk about the need for rim protection. And on the balance of the season, yes, that's a factor. But Saturday, folks, you actually had pretty decent production, especially from your backup spot in the form of Tarik Black. It was a matter, the issues that you had with the Rockets were the perimeter guys not being able to keep the Pistons penetrators in front of them. You got beaten off the dribble, the communication wasn't there, and to some degree, can added rim protection cover up those mistakes? Maybe, but at that point, you're just kind of putting a Band-Aid on rather than addressing the real issue. The real issue, in my opinion, is the intensity. For whatever reason, it was not there. It was very reminiscent last night of what we saw in the two Lakers games and the Clippers games, the Lakers and the Clippers that they lost to start that five-game losing streak, and then the Lakers game on New Year's Eve that the Rockets won, but took until double overtime, required James Harden playing 41 minutes. Maybe that played some role in his hamstring injury, et cetera, et cetera. So we've seen this too often lately, and it's discouraging because, you know, the first game against the Magic, the first game without Harden, the Rockets came out with a point to prove. They gave up only 4 points to the Magic in the first 7 minutes of the game, only 12 points in the first quarter, held them below 100 for the game, despite playing at a pretty decent clip. The intensity was there. And against the Warriors, were there breakdowns? Yes, but in my opinion, the breakdowns against the Warriors were more based on the personnel and the ball movement of the Warriors and the incredible shooting rather than any specific just lack of effort or energy from the Rockets. Unfortunately, Saturday was a regression to the habits of that losing streak, especially against the bad teams. And it's discouraging because, as we've discussed, without James Harden, your margin of error is significantly smaller. You need to be able to grind to bring that intensity on an every night basis because you don't have the ability to just expect 120, 130 points and James Harden to bail you out the way you can against lesser teams. You know, you think back to that homestand when I guess you could first see the cracks developing for the Rockets. And of course, it did coincide with Luke Bamute's injury. Let's be honest about that. That's still a factor. Sounds like he's getting closer. So hopefully in the next week, he'll return and that will provide some much needed help from a depth and a just an overall talent standpoint on the defensive end. But more than that, you can see the cracks developing early in that homestand when the Pelicans game, and I would say even that game at Portland, a couple of games before that, when you had teams that were just getting into the paint far too easily, and it felt like the Rockets were just relying on basically James Harden going Superman mode, also Chris Paul, that was when he won Player of the Week. And at this point, that margin for error is not there. So if the Rockets want to get through this stretch, still in firm position for the number two seed in the Western Conference, then you need to bring that intensity on an every night basis. And Saturday, they did not. And what's particularly discouraging about it is that it seemed like the struggles on offense then kind of manifested themselves on the defensive end. Like, there was a stretch, especially in the third quarter of that game, where it felt like the same guys who couldn't buy a look on offense, all of a sudden, then just stopped giving their full effort and attention defensively as well. And that's just the kind of lapses that you can't have with James Harden out if you're trying to get through the stretch with a passable record. And it's just very disappointing because that margin for error is not there. And to get back to where I was trying to go with the Bogut analogy, would rim protection work? Sure, but in this case, the problems weren't necessarily in the middle, because Tarik Black, at least, you're not going to bench Clint Capella, even though it was not a great game for him. Generally, Clint's a big part of your offense. In terms of the backup center spot, Tarik Black was fine. The problems came with the other perimeter guys, including some of your guys such as Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, that you rely on to be kind of the stalwarts of your defense. So it's just a very disappointing game. Yes, 1 out of 82, it happens. Also, third game in 4 nights. I would say everybody's maybe overextended a little bit in the absence of James Harden. All of those things are true. But at the same time, if you want to get through this stretch without James Harden, you're going to need some players to play above their heads a little bit for the effort to be otherworldly. And then hopefully when James comes back, maybe James, in combination with the All-Star break as well, can save you a little bit in terms of eventually letting the guys that overextend themselves in this particular stretch try and get their second wind or third wind, whatever you want to call it. But defensively, that I just felt that the effort was not there. And sometimes it's more than that. Thursday against the Warriors, as I said, I think it was more about the personnel and less about the effort. Saturday, did they miss Luke Bamute? To some degree, yes. Of course, you'd like to have his length and versatility against a Detroit team that tries to play small and is getting a lot of threes. But folks, more than that, I don't care who's out there. The Pistons got to the rim far too easily. The intensity was not there. And folks, for those thinking that James Harden was the problem with the Rockets defense from time to time, hopefully this made it clear that no, he's not. Because the Rockets, when they have these low lights defensively, it's not just about James Harden. It's a cumulative effect. And in this game, I know it sounds simple to say try harder, but that was the biggest factor. The Pistons had more energy. They played, especially in the second half, with more vigor. They attacked the rim more relentlessly, and they got more open shots as a result. Sometimes the game really is that simple. The Pistons wanted it more, and the Rockets, throw out whatever excuse you want, but the fact is they didn't, and the Pistons earned the win. Third and final point, I'm going to turn the attention back to the offense. And as I said in the first segment, we were discussing Chris Paul and then the absence of shooting. Because for Chris, it's a fine line between, you know, his usual roles as the point god, so to speak, and then potentially needing to take over games from time to time as a scorer without James Harden. Look, the shooters in this game, just not nearly good enough. And it starts with Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and PJ Tucker shooting a combined 4 of 19 from behind the arc. Now, Trevor's generally been solid, just a couple of poor games for him. But Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker, this is incredibly troubling, folks. I know I've mentioned this before, that's why I'm using it as the third segment of this. But these are basically, when the season started, not just your top, but your top two options at the power forward spot. Right now, Ryan, over the past month, since December 9th, this is 15 games, all starts for him. He is shooting 33.7% from the field and 24.6% from three. And he's still playing 27 minutes per game because, of course, the Rockets, with all the injuries, don't have that many alternative options to turn to. So it's not like it's a small sample size, but 33% from the field, 24% from three. He was a team worst minus 24 in his 23 minutes on Saturday in Detroit. Of course, that reflects that in addition to his shooting slump, he's never a particularly positive defensive player for reasons we already knew. PJ Tucker, that same time frame since December 9th, the last 15 games, he's played in all of them. He's also playing 27 minutes per game, so it's a reasonable sample. He's shooting 32.3% from the field and 25.6% from behind the arc. That's just unacceptable. Both of those guys, I've been saying mid-30s. No, they're officially shooting a combined 33% from the field and 25% from behind the arc. That is beyond unacceptable. Those are your two top options at power forward. Those are two guys, their contracts combined have $112 million in guaranteed money on them. You are paying them to produce, and certainly PJ gives you some defensive value and toughness, but I would argue that PJ's shooting slump, I think he's one of the guys in the defensive segment that should be better than what they're giving you. I think maybe the slump is taking a toll a little bit on his effort as well. But the bottom line is, 15 games for each of those guys at 27 minutes per game. This is not just randomness. This is not just, you know, the Eric Gordon slump, which the Eric Gordon slump that we talked about a month ago at its most was about 10 games. And even so, the plus-minus differentials were not that bad. You could also see him contributing in other ways. The team was still winning games. Folks, it's not like that here. The 15-game sample, it's a lot longer for Ryan and PJ. And the plus-minus, the team's wins and losses, as I said, they've now lost 7 of their past 9 games. This is not just a random cold stretch. This is a prolonged period, and you can't give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe you could with Eric Gordon. Now, are the Rockets going to do anything urgently? No, because first off, I don't think it's easy, even if they want to. With Ryan in particular, we know from the Carmelo talk, it's not like he's exactly highly sought after around the league, although I do think it's a little bit easier. I'm not going to say he's positive value. I think it's a little bit easier to move him either at the deadline or next summer when he only has 2 more guaranteed years left on his contract as opposed to 3, which was the case this summer. I think that will help the Rockets a little bit in terms of just how negative his contract is. But before they go there, folks, I don't think the Rockets want to see him as a negative asset. I think they want him to at least play to the extent he did a year ago. His play has clearly fallen off since then. And right now, there's not a move that really they can make. So I think for the time being, you have to keep throwing those guys out there and hope that eventually it turns around. But if it doesn't, boy, we're already at 15 games. If this thing gets to 20 or 25 games without turning around by the end of this month, with the February 8th trade deadline looming, you have to start looking, in my opinion, at the power forward spot, or maybe forwards in general, because certainly you still have Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute. Those are guys capable of playing minutes at the four, especially in Mike D'Antoni's system. But you have to start looking at the forward spot as a real need for this team, even just to hold on to the number two, if these two guys continue to play this way. Now, there is a long time still to go, and hopefully they're able to turn around. Even so, I don't want to make 15 games sound like it's just a, you know, conclusive sample. At the same time, it's not even, you know, a fifth of the NBA schedule. But at the same time, what I'm trying to kind of point out with this is not the same as the Eric Gordon slump. When folks asked in early December, well, when's Eric going to start making his shots again? This is something that's a little deeper. This has been going on for a while. And with Ryan, it's especially troubling because it's the thing that he's supposed to be best at. I mean, it's not like he's giving you a ton of value defensively or on the glass. No, he is paid it specifically because he is an above-average shooter. And right now, he's a significantly below-average shooter. So it's a huge problem. And we're, again, 15 games in. I don't think the Rockets are going to urgently do anything about it right now because I don't think there's really anything they can do. Hopefully, Luke Bamute coming back within the next week, that'll allow everybody to kind of have their minutes curtailed a little bit, maybe get some friendlier usage. Also, getting James Harden back, maybe, you know, another couple of weeks could help a little bit, although it's not like the looks they had Saturday were that bad. I thought both Eric Gordon and Chris Paul did a good job of setting them up. A lot of them just simply missed open shots. But those two guys, again, it's $112 million in guaranteed money that are shooting 33% from the field and 25% from three, and those are your top two options going into the year at the power forward spot. Folks, it's not just a problem. It's a big problem. There's not much they can do about it now because it's not like the trade market is particularly lucrative for either of those guys. It's not like the Rockets have that much value they can deal with anyway. But be it at the trade deadline, be it with buyouts, we've talked all year long about the need for options at the center spot. We've talked about maybe a fourth guard. Well, folks, if this doesn't turn around, I would say the forward spot may be just as real of a need as anything else. Now, there's still time. Of course, there's no reason to jump off the deep end at this point, but February is going to be a critical month from the standpoint of both the trade deadline and buyouts and finalizing this roster for the playoff run that you go on in April. And there's still 3 weeks to go until you actually get to February. That's when I think the buyouts will especially get going after the trade deadline on the 8th, because you're typically not going to buy out a guy or release him until you see that you weren't able to get significant value for him via trade. So I would say around February 1st is when Daryl Morey wants to have a true assessment of what this team, as currently constructed, is capable of. And maybe over these next 3 weeks, these two guys get going. I hope they do. But if they don't, boy, it's tough. If this continues for three more weeks and 15 games because 20 or 25, it's tough to just sit here and reasonably expect that over the rest of the year and then in the playoffs that it's just magically going to turn around. The sample will be large enough at that point to where it's a very real consideration. So again, there's no need for panic now, but it's gone on for long enough that yes, if this continues for another 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to be something the Rockets have to weigh very heavily as they go through the trade deadline period and buyouts with regards to where exactly are they going to try and target for reinforcements externally before this final playoff run. So with that, I will wrap up our abbreviated post-game episode on Sunday. I wanted to keep this one a little bit shorter because I know we've had a lot of shows of late that went long. Again, thanks to Ali Bajani for joining us on Friday's show. If you haven't heard that, that was a breakdown of the X's and O's of the Rockets offense without James Harden, which worked a little bit better in the first two games than they did in the third. Will it be better tomorrow night? Stay tuned. It's a game, the Rockets on the road in Chicago for the second game of this short two-game road trip. The Bulls have been playing better lately, but still 14-26 on the year. The Rockets certainly the better team, even without James Harden. We'll see if the Rockets hopefully come out with a chip on their shoulder, looking to avenge what happened in Detroit. Until then, though, the best way if you want to talk more Rockets, give me some feedback about what you're seeing in this losing stretch, the best way to communicate with me is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Lockdown Rockets. Or you can email us, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, if you've got questions, suggestions, things you want to know, or even advertising inquiries. Basically, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, and anything we can do to kind of help your understanding of what's going on in this rough patch for the team right now. Also, facebook.com/lockdownrockets. That's a good way that you can reach out to me and ask any more questions or see what we're doing on a real-time basis. Also, lockdownrockets.com. That's our new website. If you haven't already seen that, we're updating it every day. So if you haven't already tried it out, please check us out over at our new website, courtesy of FanRag Sports. So until tomorrow, I will wrap things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for listening. Really appreciate it. I know it's not exactly the most fun time to be a Rockets fan, but big picture, take a deep breath. They are still 27-11. They do still have a two-game lead in the loss column for the West number two seed, and they are doing this right now without James Harden. So there is reason to think that some of these issues will certainly get better in the weeks ahead. Until tomorrow, though, I will sign off. Hopefully you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll be talking here again on Monday evening after the Rockets take on the Chicago Bulls. Until then, once again, the unhappy final from Detroit, Pistons 108, Rockets 101, and the Rockets, as said, now falling to 27-11 on the year, have now lost two consecutive games without James Harden and seven of their past nine overall. So until tomorrow, thanks again to you guys for listening, and we'll be chatting again Monday evening after the Rockets take on the Chicago Bulls from the United Center in Chicago, looking to break this newfound two-game losing streak.